The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'm happy to say I have got a visitor here in the studio with whom I'm anticipating a very interesting conversation. Let me first tell you that today's programming is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call them at 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. Now, my visitor, Dan Ellison, is an attorney in private practice in Durham who has been working with and for artists, performing arts organizations, and other nonprofits for over 20 years. In that time, he has served as president of the Durham Arts Council, chairman of the board of the North Carolina Central University Art Museum, president of the Friends of the Gregg Art Museum at NCSU, chair of the Durham Cultural Advisory Board, executive director of the NC Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, and executive director of Raleigh's Historical Society and the Mordecai Square Historic Park. Folks, that's not all. He also teaches a course in the Duke University Department of Theater Studies on legal issues for the performing arts, and he teaches a service learning course on nonprofit arts and cultural institutions. And as a part of that course, he conceived and had his students work out with him something called the Dada Project, D-A-D-A, and that's what I've asked him to come in and tell us a little bit about this morning. So, welcome, Dan. I'm delighted to have you here. Dada is the way you pronounce it, right? And
that's
what does
way,
that stand
that's
for?
That's the way I pronounce it.
Okay, good.
So, Dada stands for Durham Audio Described Art Project. And I'm guessing that many of your listeners are familiar with the concept of audio description.
I expect so.
But for those who aren't, maybe that needs a little bit of explanation.
Yeah, yeah.
Some may be coming new to this.
Yeah, tell us what the program is, and then we'll talk about where the idea came from and how you put it together and how it's going.
So audio description is giving verbal descriptions to things that people with vision abilities can see, so that people who have vision loss or people who are blind can be included and can have some appreciation for what I, for instance, can see.
Yeah, that must be a very special skill.
It is a challenging skill, actually.
Yeah,
you know, how do you describe something to somebody else so that they can see it in their mind's eye, so that they can get a full understanding of it?
Yeah.
And I think that the answer is that it's an imperfect science or imperfect art, really.
Yeah. But a very valuable one. And so this arose in your nonprofit arts and cultural institutions course?
Well, the project arose as part of that.
Yeah.
The inspiration for it arose years before, probably, oh gosh, maybe 30 years before.
Tell me about that.
Back up to about probably 1982 or so. And my mom, who has had bad vision, as far as I know, all of her life, I mean, saw little pictures of her as a little girl wearing glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Her vision became progressively worse over the years. Back around 1980, 82, she was diagnosed with glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of that spark moment of an interest in, oh, wait a second, how do the arts work for people who are blind?
Yeah.
Because I started to see the future.
You already were interested in the arts.
Yeah.
The arts were going to be central to your life.
Yeah. At that time, I was a pretty serious photographer. I've had a camera in my hands ever since I was 7 years old, probably. And for those out in the radio audience there who can't see me, this show is called Modern Maturity or something like that. So 7 years old was a few years ago.
Got it.
And
we won't do the math.
Yeah, I'm okay with the math, but I won't do it anyway. And so being a photographer, serious, at least amateur photographer at that point, maybe even thinking of doing photography professionally, I started to think, oh gosh, if my mom went blind, how would she be able to appreciate the photography that I would be doing? And selfishly, also thought about, gee, glaucoma, is there some kind of genetic predisposition to that? Mm-hmm. What if I were to lose my vision? You know, what would that mean? So at the time, and this is 1980-82, technology was not anywhere what it is today with photography or anything else in the world, really. You know, I thought about some ways of printing photographs that might have some more tactile element to them, so that a person who's blind could touch the photograph after it was printed. Yeah. And, you know, and then life went on. I was in law school. That sort of was in the back of my mind, but that sort of, you know, started to stick in me. Okay, mm-hmm. How do you do something for people who are blind that's involved with the visual arts? Fast forward a bit, and I learned about audio description when my mom and dad came up to visit me. They live down in Florida. I live here in the Triangle area. They came up to visit, and in addition to photography, I'm very interested in and involved with theater. And so we went to a play at Theater in the Park here in Raleigh. Oh, and gosh, somebody help me out with, it was a play about that actress who came from Eastern North Carolina, an incredible Academy Award-winning actress. There's that scene on the beach with her and another actor whose name I can't remember.
Give me a movie title. Help me out here.
It'll come to us.
Eastern North Carolina.
Yeah.
Famous. Ava Gardner.
Yes, Ava Gardner. Yes.
Smithfield.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, it was a play about Ava Gardner, about her life. And we went to that, and it was audio described. That was news to me. I didn't know about audio description. My mom got the earphones at that time. She still had vision, vision, but, you know, her vision was pretty bad. She actually did not like the audio description earphones, so she took them off. But that was my first educational experience about the existence of it.
That you saw something could be done to link the visually impaired with the vision. So
I learned.
There you were.
So I learned about audio description, and that was somewhere, I don't know, it's still in the 80s, maybe early 90s. And fast forward again to about 5 years ago, and by then my mom's vision really was gone. I mean, she's essentially totally blind at this point as of about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And again, knowing about audio description, I've been kind of watching things and learning about audio description along the way, Googling on the internet, okay, how do I get trained to do that? And one day saw that it was being offered, training classes were being offered by Arts Access North Carolina.
Yeah.
And I was able to take that course and be trained, you know, initial training as to be able to do audio description for, primarily for theater. Audio description for theater has been around for 30 plus years, and that describes the action on stage in between the dialogue and describes the set. It hasn't really been used much for other forms of art, but Raleigh and Arts Access had done a small project of about 8 works, I think, of public art that were scattered all over the city of Raleigh, and they did some audio description that was available on a website.
When you had your training, what was the most unexpected thing that you learned about how to do audio description? I mean, was it all sort of intuitive? I mean, you thought, oh yeah, that makes sense, or did they teach you techniques that you thought, oh, I would not have thought of it that way? I mean, as a sighted person.
Well, for audio description of theater, I did learn some things that were new to me and helpful.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in theater too, and so the idea of audio description for theater is something that I keep on wanting to do as well. It's a question of finding the time. But something that they do with audio description for theater is do a pre-show description of the set, so that part doesn't have to happen live as you're sitting there watching the show, listening to the dialogue.
I was just
going to
say,
all that information.
If your voiceover is giving descriptions of what's happening on stage, you have to. It probably is a real challenge to dovetail that with the dialogue, so you're not covering up the dialogue.
Exactly. So there's that very limited amount of time in between dialogue to give any kind of description of action or description of set at that moment or costume at that moment. Or lighting, even, all of those things might be an important aspect of the show. And sometimes the lighting of theater makes all the difference for it. And so to be able to describe that the lights are dimming or they're raising up or spotlight on, you know, oh, there's a spotlight that has come and is shining on the head of Florence Nash because she is so wonderful. You know,
I have not seen that play.
Soon to a theater near you.
So it's a real challenge, but it also sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, it sounds like
I think it can be a
wonderful skill to master. So now, to do things like audio tours of public art, you don't have that challenge.
That's right.
Because you're not dealing with things that are talking at you. While
right,
you're
and it's not a moving target.
It's not a moving
either.
Target. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, you know, when this project started in Durham, or how you came to decide to get your students, which I think I understand.
That's right.
And this was from the Nonprofit Arts and Cultural Institutions.
That's right.
Class.
So that class I've been teaching now for 6 years at Duke, and it is an introduction to arts and cultural organizations, how they work, issues that they have, how you put them together. And it was a service learning class, which means that students also get involved in some project out of the classroom.
That's
the
class that Nancy and I came and talked to the students
right.
in that class.
That's right.
You forgot about that.
So, yeah, one of the best things I think about that class is that I bring guests who are involved in the arts in leadership positions and to talk about their lives and how they got into what they do. And you and Nancy, both involved with Mallarmé, came and
I remember
about
thinking
things.
At the time what fun it would be to take this class. Whenever I do that, I always want to go back to school again. Anyway,
school is fun.
School is way fun.
So I had been sort of floating around with a few different projects the first few years, and I realized, oh, you know, that proverbial light bulb went off over my head when I took the audio description class, and the trainer, Debbie Hippler, referenced that art description project that had been done in Raleigh, which was a limited focus project. And I thought, oh, we could do that. My students could do that.
Yeah. How did they respond when you brought up the notion to them and told them what you wanted them to do?
I think everybody's response has been positive and curious because there are some initial questions that come probably to everybody's mind. One is, what do we do? This is artwork that's meant to be seen. How do we translate that? And it's a challenge, and I think there's still some differences of opinion on how much personal opinion on the artwork do you give as you're describing it, or is it just the facts, ma'am? Like the Dragnet television show, just give me the facts.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your students. I mean, what are they bringing into this?
Sure. So the class is a maximum of 16 students. There are exceptions. It is a seminar at Duke. Yeah. And so a seminar is defined by the university as 16 students or less, or fewer. I'm not sure whether about
fewer,
my English.
Fewer.
I think
I'm
it is
English
fewer.
Major.
I think it is fewer.
I always thought it was 12 or fewer, but...
Well, maybe they've upped it.
That's the lucky ones, yeah.
But there are, with a little bit of exception and a little bit of bureaucracy, extend the class size to 18. Mm-hmm. And I've done that a couple of times. So the first class, when this happened, was a class of 18 students.
Yeah.
Most of them are public policy majors or econ majors, not necessarily arts majors at all, although the course is cross-listed with a bunch of different art departments. Mm-hmm. So they've all got an interest in nonprofits. They've got an interest in the arts, but it may not be their primary interest.
Yeah.
So they come at this with a lot of curiosity.
Good.
They don't know necessarily about the project in its specifics before they've gotten into the class.
Were all the students in the class required to participate in this, or
yes.
was it a volunteer?
Yes. This is all required as part of their service learning part of this class. So they're required to do this.
And so they said, but Dr. Ellison, what do we do? And you said...
first I try to let them call me Dan. Some do like to call me professor or doctor, which, I mean, I don't know about doctor at all because I'm not a PhD.
Uh-huh. Right.
So we start off, you know, with really the basics of audio description. And we team up with Arts Access because they are the leaders in the area in terms of providing arts access to people with disabilities.
So you got some Arts Access people to come in and coach the kids
right.
in the class and
That's
say,
right.
here's what you're looking for, here's what you feature.
We've been fortunate to have some great folks from Arts Access who do audio description, serious audio description of theater primarily in the area. So Debbie Hippler from Arts Access and Fred Brack from Arts Access.
Yeah.
And Fred Brack, I believe, has a show here with Triangle Radio Reading Service.
Oh.
So many of you might be familiar with him.
We haven't crossed paths yet.
Oh, he's great. He's great. Debbie and Fred are both great.
Yeah.
And they both have spouses who are blind or very low vision.
Yeah.
And so they have come in and give training to the students, usually two training sessions. One just in the classroom, talking a little bit of theory, talking about some basic skills where it might be skills of observation, really.
Sure. So then do they take them out into the community and they...
Right.
Take them to the bull or something and say, okay, now describe this for me. I mean, they have to do sort of field testing.
So the second training session has been at the Nasher Museum of Art at Duke University, where there's artwork to be described.
Yes, indeed. Wonderful stuff.
And it's on campus, and it's a class at Duke, so it's easy for the students to be there. And we have a class there at the Nasher, and the students practice describing works there and getting feedback from both Fred and Debbie, and we've had other people join us who are blind,
visually impaired,
so in addition to Fred and Debbie's spouses, the other folks, Judge Craig Brown, who's been blind for about 20 plus years now, has come and been one of the testers as well to give feedback to the students. And that's great. So this is like doing it on the fly. You know, they've got a limited amount of time to describe the important features of these works of art. Yeah. Most of the works that they have described are fall into the figurative category more so than totally abstract.
So I was under the impression that this was mainly outside sort of art installations, not like things hanging on walls in museums.
So
that makes me wonder how you decided which things you were going to describe.
So the first cohort of works that were described were out in the community. They were works, primarily sculptural works, in downtown Durham.
Yeah.
And that first class of 18 students divided up into pairs, so they worked in teams of two, to describe 9 different works of art that were in downtown Durham. So there are works along what is known as Black Wall Street, works that were made specifically to commemorate Black Wall Street, and those works were described. Then, of course, there's Major the Bull, which is the cornerstone primary work of art in downtown Durham.
The first time you told me about this, I immediately visualized the bull, and that's what, you know, whenever I think about this, when I was thinking about our having this conversation this morning, I thought about the bull. I knew that must have been central.
Right. So the bull is one of them. Then there's a unnamed work of art that we refer to as the chalice. It also there is on CCB Plaza in the heart of downtown Durham. There's a work in front of the Carolina Theater that was purchased as a result of the sculpture show that was in downtown Durham that was put together by Liberty Arts. And then there's a mural on the side of the YMCA in downtown Durham that was also described. And that mural was one of two murals that are a pair. One is at the Nasher.
And there's one, a mural in, right by the Arts Council.
Well, that mural has not been described yet.
Ah, okay.
That's on the list to do. That one's going. And that mural is the civil rights mural for Durham.
I love
it. And it has so many people. It's the entire side of a building, and it has a lot going on in it. So it is so complicated because there's so much to describe.
Whenever I pull into that lot to park by the Arts Council, I always test myself. I say, all right, Florence, who do you know? Who can you recognize? You should know more of these people.
Right.
I want to make sure we leave time so that our listeners can find out how they have access to this program.
Great question.
What do they have to do to get your tour?
You're on the ball. So let's say we've got these things described. And so we've got those 9 works. We've got another 9 works at the National Museum of Art at Duke that are described. We've got 8 more that were described in this third year that have not been put into the system yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the system? The system to use it is right now a telephone call-up system that is menu-driven. And there's a phone number.
I wish you would give it to us and say it then again.
I will. It's 919-694-DADA. And that is
which
the
is?
Equivalent of 919-694-3232. So that's 919-694-3232.
Terrific.
So you call up that telephone number, and my voice is the first one you hear, but my voice is not the only voice you hear. And it says, hey, thank you for calling. If you'd like to hear a description, and then it gives you some menu choices. Press 1 or press 2, and you'll get the code for the particular work of art to be able to hear. And then you listen.
And I'm so stuck in the 20th century, I'm still thinking about people walking around with little, you know, cassettes or something. But it's only a phone call away.
Right. Oh, what a wonderful tagline. It's only a phone call away.
Art, only a phone call away.
That's great. So it's on the telephone call-up service, which is great because a lot of people still have phones and they don't all have smartphones.
Yeah.
We are working to get this information into an app as well, and we've done some beta testing with that. That's not perfected yet, but soon to come. Hopefully within, by the end of 2018, that app will be available so that if you are near a work of art that has the audio description, it will alert you to that and you can choose to listen to it.
Wow.
It's available by this telephone call-up number, and we'll continue to add works into it. There's a website as well that is under construction, so I'm not going to give the website address right now, but that will come.
I've got another question. When you, is what you hear simply a physical description of the art, or does it say, this is the bull, it was done by so-and-so in 1996, and that artist lives in Chicago, and I mean, you get background on the creation. You get the same thing you would get from the little sticker beside a painting in a museum.
So right now, we focus on giving the physical description of the thing itself.
Yeah.
Part of this is about inclusivity. So if you are a person who's blind or very low vision and you're a visitor to Durham, chances are you've got somebody who's got vision with you. And they're looking around, they're seeing the artwork, and rather than having to rely on your friend that you're with to describe it to you, you've got somebody who maybe has taken a little bit more time and who has some level of experience and qualification. And qualification is in air quotes here to do that audio description.
Yeah.
So it's about, I think, inclusivity of, hey, this is public art. Everybody deserves to enjoy this in whatever way that they're able to enjoy it. Public money went into presenting this artwork on the streets.
And it everybody should be available to the whole public.
To the entire public.
Dan, this is fantastic. I've just, ever since I first heard about it, I've been curious to know more.
Yeah.
And
Is it perfect? No. But the world's not a perfect place.
It's not perfect because it is a living organism. It's a work in progress. Right?
Yeah.
It'll get better
and
better.
And I think like everything with artwork, everybody's got a little bit of a different take on it. So what I see as the most important piece of this artwork might not be what you see.
Yeah. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I certainly hope that a lot of our listeners are going to be able to take advantage of it. Say that phone number.
That's
one
what
more
I was
time.
Going to do. 919-694-3232. That's 919-694-3232.
Fantastic. And I think we are probably about to run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope my listeners will be sure and listen next time and that you've enjoyed today. I know you've enjoyed today. It's been terrific having this conversation with Dan. I am Florence Nash, and I'm reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and I am brought to you today, generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues, and you can call them at 919-782-4733. 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long till next time. If you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Call us at 919-832-5138.